your mind. I'm keeping you on mine.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 22nd of July. Very nice to have you with us. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and let me introduce the group to you. We'll get started right away. We welcome you to be a part of our program. All you have to do is write to us, panel at wamc.org. Invariably, this is the way we figured this out, is that we talk and we talk and we talk and we talk. And every once in a while, like these little shards will sort of emanate from the studio. And one of them will hit you safely. And you'll say, I don't like that. I want to talk about that. I'm really upset about that. And then that will compel you to go to a device and to write to us. And if it's far less dramatic than that, that's fine too.
Maybe a bubble instead of a shard.
Yes, a bubble. That's right. a little soap bubble that just drifts its way over to you as it pops beautifully on your shoulder, leaving just a dusting of mist. We would love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller in the studio. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Joe.
It's really good to have you. I appreciate you being here more than you know. Sarah Rogerson joins us, Albany Law School professor. Hello, Sarah. How are things?
They are. It is what it is.
And they are. We are thrilled to have the mayor of the city of Albany, Kathy Sheehan, with us, who joins us in the studio. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
I am well.
I see a theme here, by the way. Mike Spain's going to join us. He's the former Times Union Associate Editor. And at 9:11, he was still fighting traffic on the thruway. So, and I got into a little of that myself. So,
as did I.
Yes. He's not lying. So not that Mike ever would, but you know. he'll be along shortly, and we'll get to that in just a moment. We welcome you again, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and great pleasure to have you all with us this morning. All right, so let's go to what is happening in the world and talk about the stories for today. I mentioned yesterday I was just having trouble for whatever reason. Trying to come up with, not that it was, there's no shortage, as you all know, there's no shortage of stories to talk about, but of just finding things of what order to put them in, of what kind of leads the docket. And so we muddled our way through pretty good yesterday, but hopefully today makes a little more sense. We have a couple of stories. I mentioned this yesterday. I'm going to mention again. We're going to start with the Epstein story. I hate this story, and I don't like starting with it, but it's what's there, and that's what we're going to talk about for a few moments, and I think it is important to talk about it, so we will we'll do that. But here we go. You remember that the president said that there's nothing to see here. Look around, you know, don't look elsewhere. There's nothing to see here. Just, hey, MAGA, go back and do your thing. We've got it. We're fine. And then that didn't really work. And then he started to blame the Democrats. Obama got brought into it somehow. And that's a thing, right? And then there was a lot of distractions, which we'll get to. But in the midst of all of that, the Speaker of the House, maybe about 7-8 days ago, said, well, I think there should be more said about this. I believe that that we should investigate and find out what's going on here, and more of the files should be released. And I feel that this is absolutely important for our knowledge of the situation and for the party as a whole. And he said that until yesterday, when he said, never mind. You know, the president needs some space. I don't know if he sounded like that when he said that, but the Republican Speaker of the House has said last week that the government should release everything. Now, in a rare break, that was a rare break that the president turned out to be short-lived, however, because Johnson said on Monday that he would not hold a House vote this summer on whether the Justice Department should release files related to the accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, retreating from his demand last week that the material must come out. Reacting to intense pressure from the angry MAGA base, Mr. Johnson had on Tuesday showed a rare glimpse of daylight between himself and Mr. Trump, who was imploring his supporters to move on from the matter. "We should put everything out there and let the people decide," Mr. Johnson had said on the Benny Show. When anybody ever been a guest on the Benny Show? No.
First time I heard
yet.
Of it.
When when asked about the Justice Department's investigation into Mr. Epstein, "I agree with the sentiment that we need to put it out there. The Rules Committee, a powerful panel controlled by the Speaker, had even approved a measure that would bring to the floor a resolution calling for the disclosures, though Republicans gave no timetable for voting on it. Less than a week later, the Speaker reverted to his more familiar posture of deferring to the president. Mr. Johnson told reporters at the Capitol on Monday, when asked about holding a House vote on releasing the investigative files, "We need the administration to have the space to do what it is doing." I'm not sure what that is, but they need more time to do it. What do you think, Sarah?
Apparently they're looking at other files. I mean, whatever time and space they need it, then they're pulling status from Venezuelans. They're doing all kinds of stuff. This is the classic Trump playbook, right? Like, distract and divert and then do the important destructive work while everyone else is talking about something that makes more headlines.
JP?
So this is, in my view, a unique scandal for the Trump administration, because Trump's playbook includes a couple of things. Usually when a scandal comes out, one, he's got his base of support that is backing him and fighting the left and the media on whatever that scandal is. And then two, you combine that with there's always going to be a scandal in a couple days or within a week, so you can always change the topic of conversation and move on to the next scandal. Neither of those two things are happening right now. So one, the Trump's base is saying, this is BS. We want these files. We've been promised these files. Your attorney general a few months ago said that these files are on my desk and we're going to release them. And so the base of Trump's support is against him on this, which is so rare. I can't think of another example. And two, he's trying to create other scandals and change the topic, but he's unable to do so. It's summertime in the media, and this is the biggest story going on right now. The other big story, of course, is, you know, what happened at the Coldplay concert on Thursday night. So that, and that was like a three or four day story, right? So this is summertime, not a lot going on. And Trump cannot escape the Epstein scandal.
Last Friday, as we were sitting here raising money for the radio station after the House and Senate voted to claw back the funding, I realized that the two big stories that day were the Coldplay concert and the loss of funds for NPR. And I weirdly had been a part of both of them because I was at the concert on Wednesday, watching this unfold in real time. And we all thought to ourselves, ooh, that could be trouble. I didn't realize it was going to take over our lives, which is exactly what it has done.
Well, but isn't that a little bit too, right, JP, that they're maybe stoking this story? I just, the more that comes out about it, the less I think is really there. So why not milk it for all it's worth, keep the attention on that instead of something that's probably even more problematic for the Trump administration.
Well, yeah. This is for him to personally call Rupert Murdoch and say, I do not want this story to come out about the drawing that I sent to Jeffrey Epstein.
That's fair.
That is a big indication of if it was a false story, you'd say, fine, put it out. I don't care. I've had plenty of negative stories about me. But he really did not want that to come out. He really does not want that the what that letter looks like to come out. And that has not come out. I assume that will come out in the coming days. And it's going to continue to hurt him, and it hurts him with his base, and it's not what he wants to be talking about, in my view.
You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do have to say, like, we know that Trump has groped women, assaulted women. He was determined to have actually sexually assaulted a person by a jury of his peers in a civil trial, albeit. But
who we had on yesterday, by the way.
What more could we learn that would matter? Because
exactly.
He was elected president with his base knowing all of those things. And so I do kind of scratch my head and think, what could possibly be in these files that he does not want people to know, since we already know?
It's a great question, and I don't understand because it doesn't seem, while salacious, it doesn't seem that it's just the drawing, which as described, crude and icky, but I don't know that it is any worse than the Access Hollywood tape or any number of other things that have been that are known or have been suggested about his behavior, especially when coming to women. Mike Spain made it through the dink of the dank, and he's here, and we welcome you. We'll put you on five there. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm happy to finally be here, and I apologize for being late.
No worries.
But I agree. With all that's come out about Donald Trump so far, you know, all the negative news, like the Access Hollywood tape, the history of sexual harassment of women, documentation of that, just his, you know, his ineptness about the Constitution and what it says and the Declaration of Independence and American history and all those other things. Is this the thing that's going to take him down? I just can't imagine it. I don't think so. I mean, like you said, Joe, I mean, I kind of hate this story. It's not of substance in the sense of, like you're saying, Sarah, you know, like what's going on with immigration right now? What's going on with the impact of the big, better, awful bill? I mean, you know, there's so many other more important things, and yet people are fixated on this. And if it does take them down, that's fine. I mean, you know, maybe, but it just diminishes any focus on things that really are about today. In a way, I'm kind of agreeing with Trump, saying, oh, he's so history. He's been dead since 2019. But if it takes him down, I'll go for it.
And I've said this over the last week and a half, and I'm sorry for repeating myself, but, you know, I've been doing the show for 25 years. It's bound to happen. You're just going to say the same thing over and over again. No, I said it yesterday. I don't understand if there is such concern and worry. Then why was the binder put on the desk of Pam Bondi in the first place? That is what I don't get. We're going to clear the air. We're going to tell you all of this information. Everything should come out, and we are going to look at this. It's there on my desk, and somebody said to Pam Bondi at the time, well, is this going to be everything? And he goes, oh, it's going to be everything because this president wants to make sure it is transparent. And that's what she said.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, but why would you even bring it up if there was a hint that it was going to cause you problems later on? I'm just talking political strategy here. And also that it wasn't like we didn't know there was a hint. because there's like 80 pictures of the two of them just, you know, fawning all over each other.
And video.
Yeah, and video. Yeah. That's right, and video. So that's the part of the story I do not understand.
Well, it might be dissension. It is dissension in the ranks. And I'm interested in whatever polling company is asking people who, whether or not they care about this story, like where those people are located, who their representatives are. You know, when push comes to shove, people are thinking about self-preservation in the Republican Party, trying to figure out, does their base care about this? And if so, how much? And if so, how much noise do I need to make about it? You know, that then it gets really interesting. I don't know if any such a poll exists, but it would be wild to understand, like, where in the country the concentration of Trump supporters are that are fervent about this issue.
And again, like, we're talking about this while children are starving in Gaza. People are being shot and killed. It's a situation that is not resolving itself. We have, you know, the war in Ukraine. And then we have our own domestic issues around immigration and around the impacts of the big whatever that bill is that is going to decimate rural hospitals, food access, healthcare,
higher education.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
So it does kind of give one pause to say, what on earth are we talking about this for? And I don't mean we in this room.
No,
but,
I understand.
But the fixation of his base on this and the fact that it is something that we're still talking about. I mean, I don't know. Trump has always been excellent at diverting us from talking
about
substantive issues.
We'll take a break. Be right back.
Love, I take it slow.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Bonnie Light Horseman is the band. They have a new double album called Keep Me On Your Mind, Set You Free. They're playing in Kingston, New York tomorrow, the 23rd. You can find out more by going to assemblykingston.com. You can also find more about the tracks that we're playing as our bumper music into our roundtable panel segments by going to wamc.org/roundtable and looking at the playlist. But again, more information on Bonnie Light Horseman at the Assembly at assemblykingston.com. All right, let's go back to the story that we are discussing, which is the starting off by talking about Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, saying he won't hold a vote on looking for more files to be released in the Epstein matter, which goes against what he said a week ago and said that he wants to give the president more time, more space, I believe was the word that was used. Here's a couple of things. We're all talking about, the mayor mentioned this right before our break, of all the other things that are going on. But then there's all the other things that Donald Trump is feeding us that he wants us to look at instead of the Epstein story. So over the past 48 hours, President Trump has asked his Truth Social followers, how did former USAID Administrator Samantha Power make all of that money? He said he might scuttle a stadium deal. The Washington Commanders don't change their name back to the Washington Redskins. He highlighted a memo from his Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, that said Obama administration officials planned a treasonous conspiracy in 2016 aimed at Trump, emphasizing the point. To further his point, he also reposted an AI-generated video of Barack Obama being arrested in the Oval Office.
Maybe Obama should put out a video of Trump being brought into court in New York City when he had to face his arrest.
But which is not generated
by AI.
Would
that not be AI generated? During a fusillade of posts on the social network that he owns, Trump even released a 3-minute mashup of clips that would seem more at place on screen at a sports bar than in a president's official feed, at a woman snatching an approaching snake from the grass, a car sliding under a truck, barreling along the highway, no fewer than four people doing tricks on motorcycles and jet skis. What is going on there? On Monday, Gabbard added another item to the list announcing the release of hundreds of thousands of documents related to the 1968 assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King, and for what it's worth, that is against the wishes of the King family. The through line connecting those disparate posts, they have nothing to do with the political problem that has dogged Trump for weeks, and that is the 2019 death of Jeffrey Epstein. So, right, there's a lot of diversion. And what's interesting and different, because you said this, Mayor, that we're talking about the Epstein story. And, of course, Trump doesn't want us to talk about the Epstein story. So he keeps throwing all these other things, hoping that we'll pick up one of those and talk about that. But so far, nothing, and I say this for the general, in general, in the media, and for the cultural conscience of America, nothing seems more interesting than this particular story at the moment.
Well, the story apparently has legs, as they say. You know, it does.
Well, that's what you newspaper people say.
Yeah, it's one that It's fascinating, obviously, for people who are conspiracy theorists and are into the Epstein theory and all that. But it's also interesting to watch Trump get caught up in the conspiracy theory that he promulgated. And that's fascinating. It's puzzling that, as we've said, it's puzzling that it's that gets the attention. But, you know, it just shows you how completely upside down things have become.
And John Stewart last night made a good point where he gave credit to the MAGA crowd for keeping this on the front page. And he spoke to the MAGA crowd saying, this is what your president thinks about you.
Were they listening last night, you think?
Well, what he says is, look at what he's trying to divert your attention with all of these different, this is how he thinks of you, is that you guys, you know, if they change the stadium name to, you know, from the Commanders to the Redskins, that all of a sudden that he's going to be able to shore up his base. But Mike, do you think anything about this being summertime? You know, the news slows down in the summer, and this happens to be
something that
just won't go away here. It's a dog days of summer. It happens to be July.
No, I'll go with what Kathy Sheen just said, that there's plenty of news going on. There's no vacuum. I mean, what's going on with ICE coming into communities and masks and dragging people off their jobs and shipping them out of the country before they can blink twice. What's going on in Gaza? I mean, that's horrendous. And we're talking about this, you know?
Well, and if anything, it sounds like he's cherry-picking stories that might catch his base's attention a little bit more. You know, there's hating on the liberal elite, like Samantha Power. I've been following her career forever. I read her first book by accident, A Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide, and just sobbed. I mean, it's incredibly compelling work. She's married to Cass Sunstein, who, you know, is a distinguished professor at Harvard Law School, which is another favorite target of the Trump administration. It's just that he's not churning out exciting enough news to overturn this story, and it's probably driving him crazy. Because all of those things, you know, oh, and she made some money, you know, given all the books that she's published and all the things that she's done with her life, I'm sure USAID was, which, you know, took up like maybe less than 3% of our entire budget when
right.
It's doubtful that there's any there. But even that, he can't get legs under any other story.
A couple letters that we got. Gray says, is there any possibility that release of the Epstein material will show that Trump had sex with trafficked underage girls? That's what they used Epstein to hint Democrats did. Often they accuse others of doing what they were actually doing, like Trump using anti-Semitic language last week.
Well, that's a good point. It seems like, it's definitely true. Trump accuses his opponents of the very thing that he turns around and does. I mean, it's his modus operandi. It's been that way a long time.
And, you know, the feds go, in my experience, go very, very hard against pedophiles, right?
Yeah.
And that's, if you're having sex with a 14 or 15-year-old, you are a pedophile. There are people serving life sentences for engaging in this type of criminal activity. And so, you know, I would be stunned if that was what are in the files. Because, again, Joe, to your point, like, if they knew that, why did they fan the flames of the conspiracy theory? And it would have been he would have you know, distanced himself from it. So I'm not suggesting that that's the case, although I think maybe the reason that we keep talking about it is because it truly doesn't make sense. I mean, a lot of what Trump does doesn't make sense. But ultimately, when you look behind it and you look at his ulterior motives and all of that, you figure it out and can pull it together. But this one, it doesn't seem like he would have fanned the flames of this if he had known that there was incriminating evidence about his own behaviors.
Could he possibly not have known? He was president in 2019 when Epstein died in jail. And if they had a file, wouldn't he have been aware that maybe the FBI was behaving a little differently there? I mean, that was, you know, when Jeff Sessions actually, you know, noted his conflict of interest and stepped aside of the Russian investigation. There were some actual practices that resemble, you know, normalcy back then. And maybe the FBI did not let the White House see the file. And then he drummed up the conspiracy theory after he left office. And then he gets in office and he sees the file off Pam Bondi's desk and says, oops, nope. Maybe that's what happened. Who knows?
I understand. I think that's a perfectly rational explanation, except that He knew Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I just, the pictures were there, the stories were there. How many people had mentioned it? And you think to yourself, oh, well, there's a hot stove. I'm thinking, I mean, I know this is, I'm being rational, I apologize. But, you know, as a candidate and President Trump, there's a hot stove there. Maybe you don't go and put your hands on it. But
I would also say that, you know, with private air travel, you don't put random people on. You have a flight manifest with the names of everybody that's on the flight, and those records, I imagine, go back to when Trump may have been flying on Epstein's jet, or Epstein may have been flying on Trump's jet. And if there are records of him flying on that jet to the island, that's brutally incriminating for him. And for a guy like Trump, who kind of, you would think, like, oh, I would remember if I was on that flight or on that plane once or twice. But this guy has lived a crazy life for 50 years. He may not even remember that stuff. It's like, oh, my God, I went down that many times? Good Lord.
He doesn't remember who appointed Jerome Powell as the head of the Federal Reserve himself, actually.
Well, we had E. Jean Carroll on the program yesterday, and he was stymied, showing a picture that he could not tell Marla Maples, his wife, from E. Jean Carroll. So, yeah, there are those inconsistencies as well.
Well, before this file made it to Pam Bondi's desk, it was assembled by the FBI, right?
Yes.
At least in part. So we need a Jim Comey. We need, I mean, there are multiple copies of this file at this point. It's not contained. So it could come from anywhere.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to the letters. We have some point-counterpoint letters. I'd like to start with those, and then we'll move on to other subjects as well. I promise. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Mayor Kathy Sheehan, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Sarah Rogerson making up our group. We welcome you, panel, at WAMC.org, talking about the Epstein Files case. And so, as I said, we're going to get a little point counterpoint in our letters here. You says Robert. You are still talking about Epstein because Joe has put it at the top of the docket day after day.
How dare you?
This is only the second day, by the way. But okay.
Day after day.
It's called clickbait. Yes, it takes hard work and journalism to educate the populace. All right. Then we go to Jeff. Okay. So, members of your panel seem to think it's not a big deal to have a history of assaulting women, etc. Have you read the nature of the charges against Epstein? They involve what amounts to rape of teenage girls. If Trump was in any way involved with that, he definitely needs to go. Come on. We are not rah-rahing what is going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I believe I'm the one who said, to be clear, what I said was these allegations have been out there and proven to be factual about Donald Trump, and people voted for him anyway. I find that abhorrent. Abhorrent. So just to be on the record, you know, there are people, as I said, spending many, many years in jail for this activity. And if he engaged in that activity, so should he.
Same. And my point was, to the extent that we don't know what's in there, we're opining on whether it's something that would be criminally, that would lead to criminal liability or not. And so that's sort of like what we're talking about.
And he ran for president saying, "I'm going to release the Epstein file." That was part of his own message, and his attorney general said, "It's on my desk with a glowing smile on her face. We're about to release it, and now all of a sudden we can't see it."
Let's go to another letter. This one from Lori. Do you not think that the MAGA folks want the files released because they're sure that their leader is protecting some deep state liberal Democrat? Well, that was the original, but they're the ones who fanned the flames on that, right? I mean, it was Trump and during the campaign and others who fanned those flames. So yes, perhaps. Now we go to this story, letter from David. I'd be grateful if somebody would explain to me how the Epstein issue could possibly derail Trump. Trump's voters either A, already knew he was a sexual predator, enthusiastically voted for him anyway, or B, don't stay informed anyway and thus don't care. And this is, I think, a valid question as to, I don't.
Yeah, he is a felon.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, I think the latter, that people are not paying attention, somehow these stories about, a sexual predator kidnapping teenagers and putting him into sexual bondage like Epstein was accused of, and frankly, pretty much we realized that was true, that story breaks through to people who aren't paying attention to Gaza, paying attention to immigration raids, and not paying attention to a lot of other outrageous things that are going on. That does break through. That has, it's that kind of a story.
All right. Let's move on to other things. And oh, that was the hilarious thing. Thank God. All right. Let's go to this story. One of the things we mentioned this, one of the things that was sent out there as a diversion, if you will, is the Martin Luther King documents. And so if we take that story of itself, it is something else that the president promised, that he was going to release these files on Martin Luther King. He was also going to release files on the assassination of JFK. So yesterday they did. Historians said they saw little of note in the assassination records that President Trump disclosed, despite opposition from most of Dr. King's family. More than 6,000 documents related to the 1968 assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, totaling nearly 250,000 pages, were posted to the website of the National Archives late Monday afternoon in what the administration hailed as a triumph of transparency. But several noted King historians said they had found very little in the way of new revelations about the death of the civil rights leader in the documents, and noted that the trove does not include FBI wiretap recordings of Dr. King and other materials that remain under court seal until 2027. The release on Monday with no prior notice came at a time when Mr. Trump and the White House officials have sought to divert attention from, as we were talking about, the Jeffrey Epstein story. The Trump administration official said the King assassination documents include notes on the leads pursued by investigators and interviews with people who knew his killer, James Earl Ray, and previously unreleased details of interaction with foreign intelligence services during the manhunt for Mr. Ray. A lone audio file released on Monday includes part of a law enforcement interview with Jerry Ray, one of James Earl Ray's siblings. In a statement, officials said the published documents had, quote, never been digitized and sat collecting dust in facilities across the federal government for decades. Many of the pages have been rendered almost illegible by time and the digitizing process. There were random and wide-ranging accounts of the investigation of manhunt, including hundreds of news clippings, tips from the public, accounts of Mr. Ray's forays into dance classes and locksmith school, and his fondness for aliases drawn from James Bond novels. David Garrow, the author of a Pulitzer Prize-winning King biography, as well as a book about the FBI spying campaign on Martin Luther King, said his initial review led him to conclude that there was little of public interest in the files, much of which we had already disclosed. I saw nothing that struck me as new.
How does that guy read 240,000 pages in a day and he says there's nothing new? That's wild. Yeah. I would think there's something that could help.
Well, you have the AI recap.
Yeah. What's the they just
it's all fit into AI.
And then they come up and say, here's the
interesting. I agree with you to some degree. Historians will go through it and they'll find interesting tidbits, and you know, someone may write another book about King and include details about Ray. I mean, that he took dance class and went to locksmith school. I mean, that's sort of a little tidbit of interest. But those are the things that fill up a novel or a historian's recreation of something, or maybe a movie down the road. But, I mean, there's really not much impact to this. I always thought that that Trump wanted to get the King files out there because there were some unfavorable information in the files that he'd like to see out there about King, just to diminish King's legacy, anything he could do to knock that down, because he was such a remarkable figure in our history, King was. And, you know, but now the timing, I mean, it's no question. One word, distraction. Yeah. And we're talking about it.
But I also think that, you know, releasing documents like that just to the broad public, I think, raises the conversation around what scholars do when they do this historical research. I mean, oftentimes files like this are made available to scholars, people who are doing research, because oftentimes what's being written in those notes turns out to be completely wrong. Somebody makes a statement, an officer is taking down that statement, an FBI agent is taking down that statement, and that statement is full of falsities. But when you're reading it, it reads as if this is a person signs to it. This is my statement. I swear to it. And so it does take that level of being a scholar, a researcher, somebody who can then go back and say, yep, well, we found out 3 weeks later that this person recanted this story. And so, sure, there could be potentially things that are in there that do paint Dr. King in a negative light, but that may turn out to be completely false. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what people do with them, I don't know. To me, I was just put off by the fact that there were 250,000 pages. And I thought, well, I don't think this is what I'll be scrolling through this weekend. seems like a lot.
Yeah.
The book I'm reading right now is far more interesting.
What is that?
I'm actually taking a trip to Egypt. So I'm reading right now a biography of a very famous female archaeologist from back in the 1920s and 30s.
Oh, very cool.
Yes.
Excellent. JP, were you going to say something?
Maybe it's just the from one conspiracy to another. He's maybe part of this too is he's trying to say that this is all part of a conspiracy, and since there's nothing in the King file, ultimately there would not be anything in the Epstein file.
Yeah, you want files? I'll show you files.
I'll show you
files.
So many files.
I'll show you some files.
There's nothing here. There's nothing there. There's nothing in these files anywhere.
Did a little Jay Leno impression there. I didn't mean to. Sorry.
and we may get the Epstein files, you know, in another 20 or 30 or 40 years, and then by that time. We'll look at it, and it'll be a distraction for some other files we're looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think to the mayor's point, too, I mean, given how historians work in taking this information and combing through it and looking at it and having questions that they're looking for answers and using new resources that come up from time to time, whether things are just released or bodies of information are located and found, and how they work. It may not be a bombshell, but it may help put things into a different light or certainly give it a context that wasn't there before. But as far as looking at the files and saying, oh, this totally changes how we view Martin Luther King and his assassination, yeah, that's a harder thing to think is going to exist.
I mean, the one thing that the story that I read was a little interesting, but it doesn't sound surprising, and I think it was known. It just shows how the FBI became more alarmed by King's activism on the anti-war movement and on the income inequality aspects of America, and not just on civil rights. I don't know where those diverge, but, you know, that was one of the assertions in the story. And, you know, it gives you a glimpse of how the FBI was pretty paranoid under J. Edgar Hoover, too. And
that's
also
right.
Been documented.
Right. And he wanted dirt. Hoover wanted dirt. Right. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll move on to other topics. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. You can join us and come along for the fun. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back.
Wildflower in the meadow. I'm pulling the petal.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Thank you very much. I froze on that word discussion for some reason. Good morning, all. We're with you till 10:30 this morning, and so we've got about 22 minutes to wrap up some things here, and I'd like to go to the Harvard story, and this is about the Harvard hearing that took place yesterday in a courtroom in Boston, where a lawyer for Harvard called the Trump administration's case against the school, quote, cooked up. A federal judge appeared deeply skeptical on Monday of the Trump administration's efforts to strip Harvard University of billions of dollars in research funding, suggesting the school might prevail in its legal battle against the government. Judge Allison Burroughs did not issue a ruling during a crucial hearing, which lasted more than 2 hours in her courtroom in Boston, but she did seem receptive to Harvard's arguments, as both the school and the government sought to have the case decided in their favor without a trial. The judge unleashed a barrage of pointed questions at the lone Justice Department lawyer. She demanded to know, for instance, how the administration could reasonably tie withdrawal of medical research funding to concerns about the civil rights of Jewish people. And she appeared bothered by the administration's hurried approach to attacking Harvard's research funding, suggesting they were potentially staggering constitutional consequences if the government could punish a university without due process. Monday's hearing came 2 months after Harvard sued the Trump administration in the lawsuit. Harvard accused the government of threatening the school's First Amendment rights when it conditioned federal funding on the university, bowing to a set of Trump administration demands. Beyond free speech concerns, a central question in the case is whether the Trump administration ignored rules and procedures when it blocked the funds. Sarah.
It's always the Administrative Procedure Act that will save us all every time under the Trump administration, because they're the ones that don't know how to read the fine print, which I think was one of the government lawyers' quotes, too, that Harvard wasn't reading the fine print, which is hilarious for lots of reasons. But there was another great quote from the lawyer for Harvard, which I think sums it up in terms of the larger, bigger, more important question. And he says, it's the constitutional third rail, or it should be, for the government to insist it can engage in viewpoint discrimination. You know, we're talking about thought police. We're talking about really a core pillar of an authoritarian regime. We're talking about a case that could be appealed to the Supreme Court. And we're talking about academic freedom and free speech, which are different but related. So there's a lot packed into this. And also, you know, the Trump administration, if I'm reading the tax bill correctly, is also taxing on a sliding scale, if I understand it correctly. I still need to read more articles on this. But they're taxing endowments on a sliding scale, depending on how much is in your endowment, which seems targeted towards large university systems Harvard. Like Harvard, which has the largest in United States history.
It's like they do with individuals, though, right?
Yeah.
But an endowment for a not-for-profit that uses it for academic purposes, I mean, the thing that worries me, Sarah, is that does the Constitution explicitly protect academic freedom? It's the convention and the interpretation of the First Amendment that we get that from, and yet the way this – I mean, this is a federal court judge in Boston, and Judge Burroughs, who – Trump immediately attacked, of course, as being a total disaster. It'll be appealed. It'll be appealed. And perhaps it will get to the Supreme Court. And those are the guys I worry about, you know, because they seem to be drawing a line between you have the right to do this. It may be completely awful to do this, but you have the right to do this. And they've been siding with Trump. And it's just it's really scary.
Yeah, no, academic freedom is definitely more of a self-policing mechanism within academia. The First Amendment is the bigger question because that impacts everybody, not just academics.
But I think there, you know, what we're talking about here are funding is funding that was already given to the university, right? So Harvard got this funding, signed the contracts, and has been working on these research projects, and they're funded. And so, you know, I think the different argument is in the future, right? Does the government have to fund any private university? And if they, for any reason at all, and that seemed to be the Trump administration's kind of argument there. But I think, you know, what this judge is talking about is, wait a minute, you're talking about pulling funding, basically terminating a contract because of speech. And that is, she expressed concern, raised issues around the Constitution, around due process, that you can't just, even if you have a clause in the contract, I mean, contracts with the city of Albany, we can typically terminate on 30 days notice or 60 days notice. But if I say I'm terminating because, and then fill in the blank with something that's unconstitutional, that should be problematic. And that, I think, is the question that's being asked here. I don't think that it's going to help Harvard in the long run, though, because future grants certainly are not guaranteed or even something that would necessarily be put up to that same kind of scrutiny.
You know what, though? From what I understand in talking with other academics at large public universities, and really this is one conversation, this is anecdotal, but this person, this particular academic has multiple grants that are flowing through their department. And they said more recently they've had to sit with federal officials who are distributing these grants, like the NIH or whoever the grant is running through. And the government officials are reading a statement that basically says that you won't discriminate if you receive these funds. And it's like verbatim. They're like, so we have been asked to read this statement about non-discrimination, which is kind of ironic given the Trump administration's DEI pushback. And then that's it. And then they discuss the details of the grant. So it's sort of like, I think smart people are finding ways to work around these bizarre government mandates that are coming just from solely from the executive. And that's sometimes the beauty of an administrative state, is that things have to trickle through multiple hands before, you know, the money that is allocated in the budget actually gets to the people who are working with it in this case.
But that's why the changes that Trump wants to make to civil service are so dangerous.
Yeah.
Because how do you get to that authoritarian state? And yes, you need the bureaucrats, those who are the cogs in the wheel, to also be aligned with the thought police at the top. And so I think that if you look at the next 3 years, how long will it take to suss out the people who are just doing their jobs and following the law and replace them with people who will just unquestioningly do what the administration wants them to do?
Well, that was the DOGE effort, right? DOGE was trying to get all those people cleared out somehow.
And a lot of them are gone.
Yeah. The State Department last week, was it like 1,600 people?
In one day.
Anybody else on that? All right. We will move on to what probably will be our, well, maybe not our last term, but let's see. Okay, so this is about the merger. You may have heard of it. The Skydance Media Paramount merger. And so if you're following at home, there was a settlement that said that, to settle the lawsuit against the company, that Paramount said it would pay $16 million in total to settle the lawsuit, which stemmed from CBS's editing of a 60-minute interview featuring then-Vice President Kamala Harris. Got it. I understand that. All was good. Sign. Sealed, deliver. 2 nights later, Trump said he would receive $16 million plus $16 million. It would double. In addition to the previously announced money, he said Paramount would provide between $16 and $19 million in advertising value. That followed a report on Fox News that Trump could receive millions of dollars in additional compensation in the form of advertisements or public service announcements, quote, in support of conservative causes. Paramount has denied that its settlement includes public service announcements and said it has no knowledge of any promises or commitments made to President Trump. Now, three liberal senators want to know what's going on. So they're looking and saying, is there any truth to President Trump's claim that Paramount is actually getting paid about $32 million to settle his lawsuit against the company, double what was announced by CBS? And it is a statement that has come from these three senators. Skydance Media, which is slated to merge with Paramount, has not commented on Trump's claims. So Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Ron Wyden sent a letter Monday to the company's chief executive, David Ellison, asking him to address Trump's claims of a side deal. Anyone?
So the company, Paramount, they really want the $8 billion deal to happen. And you might say, well, what's the big deal about the deal? When a deal like that happens, the top executives all make tens of millions of dollars. They make, and not that they're poor right now, but this is life-changing money for these top executives when you have a deal like that approved. And they want to get it approved by the government. So I watched Colbert last night, and I watched Jon Stewart, and they were both, criticizing the company, saying, hey, because we were critical of the company, that's why Colbert got canceled.
They did not back down.
No.
And there was no indication that they were. I think they're just going to go full bore until.
Until they are pulled the plug,
right?
Yes, yeah. And Jon Stewart made the point that his show is owned by the same company that Colbert's
also
show.
Also Paramount, yes.
And Stewart made a really great point in that if Paramount is trying to buy favor from the president, it's hard to buy favor from this president because Rupert Murdoch, who has done more for President Trump than anybody other than Joe Biden, he is being sued currently by Trump for $10 billion after he has his network has done more for Trump than anybody else. They also Colbert also was pushing back on the fact that it was a financial decision, and this is a open question. Brian Stelter had a very interesting piece about how much money that the show was losing, but also the making the case, of course, that okay, if a show's losing $30 or $40 million a year, that you could, and you have, but you have the top-rated show, you could maybe cut some of those 200 staffers. You could ask Colbert to take less money and revive that institution that's been around for 30 years. So my view is that while Paramount thought this was a good business decision, I think long-term it's going to be a poor business decision for them. They should have kept that enterprise going, and they're going to come under more scrutiny from the world than they would have with just having Stephen Colbert hammering them every night.
But, JP, as you said at the very beginning, the leaders of Skydance and Paramount will reap millions of dollars each.
Oh, they'll reek, too.
They'll reek.
If it goes through.
It's
a big if.
Yeah, those guys will be long gone, and their kids will go to Harvard, and everything will be happy for them, and CBS and Paramount. Will,
maybe not Harvard.
Yeah.
See if they're still around.
Yeah. Also, the New York Times had an interesting story about the predictions around Stephen Colbert's career, right?
Right.
It's only good for him. It makes him into a hero. I mean, he already was. Didn't they do the March to Restore Sanity?
I think
I went to that.
Yes.
Right?
So did we, yes.
Yeah, so they're heroes already, and you're just
a martyr.
Like, cementing. Yeah, their martyrdom.
Well, he said that last night during the show. He was like, yeah, don't screw up my martyrdom.
Because I think he has had some substantial influence in the last few elections. So the timing of this is really crappy, too, for the Republicans because of the midterm elections coming up. These are not stupid people. Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are extremely savvy. And there's like a billion other networks now salivating to bring their desk over to their network because they bring this whole following that's extremely loyal. It's just from a business perspective, it doesn't make much sense. It seems like a bunch of businessmen who don't have a lot of political sense.
Colbert said at one point, I don't remember what the numbers were, but he said, and they said we lost 40 to 50 million dollars. He said, I don't know where that came from. We may have lost like 10, but I don't know where they get the other 40 million from. And then they flash on the screen the $32 million that was paid off to the. Oh, right. That's where that came. That's what.
Well, I think, zooming out, the fact that we have a sitting president of the United States who sued in what was anyone who knows about the First Amendment and the case law.
The right to edit.
Right. I mean, ludicrous, right? And so for Colbert to question, is this a bribe, is a perfectly legitimate question. It's the same question that people asked about, the mayor of New York City when his case got dismissed. This is a president who operates completely outside, any sort of norm that has existed before, and then to find out now he's bragging that it wasn't just 16 million, it's this other number. It calls into question every decision that CBS is going to make about the content of its newscasts, the content of what it's showing, it all to get this FCC approval. And Trump can control that. I mean, he'll tell the FCC, you're going to approve this. I mean, who in this room doesn't think that that conversation has already happened?
It's completely transactional. That's the way everything is.
And Mike, wasn't there, and any of you can jump in, my guess is Mike knows the answer to this, but wasn't the ABC deal also, didn't that have a component of
well, the George Stephanopoulos actually referred to the Gene Carroll conviction for sexual assault
as rape.
Quoting the judge in the case who said, de facto, this is rape.
Right. But in that settlement, was there not money included in there that would also be for these
library
announcements?
Well, yeah,
for
and public service announcements for conservative causes.
Yes,
yeah.
It was similar
it was a whole package of things.
Is that where those billboards are coming from? There's a lot of Jesus happening on these billboards these days. I just noticed.
There's a whole school that says Jesus was a liberal. He was for the poor and the downtrodden.
Yeah, no, I'm in that school. It's a little weird.
That's what I'm going to take from today's show. There's a lot of Jesus happening.
You just got to look for it.
Yeah, you just have to. You just have to search it out. But to your point, Mayor, it's this. It's no different than you can be your best friend. You can be the best friend of the president, Rupert Murdoch, who, you know, basically put you on a pedestal and gave you everything you have politically, and go after that. Public radio and television, and they're saying bad things about me, so I'll just cut their funding and I won't do anything. And then you have a show, and while there's no direct link to this yet, although there may soon be, that there is a show that is highly critical, in which the president has said, if I had my way, we would just pull the license and cancel it, and then mysteriously, 2 days after he calls the deal that was reached a bribe, he is pulled and the show is canceled.
I mean, Eminem, the rap artist, is unfortunately probably one of the best examples of turning a career turning government targeting into a career. And so maybe I can quote Eminem and say, the FCC won't let me be me. So let me see. They try to shut me down on MTV, but it feels so empty without me. A lot of people know that lyric. Unfortunately, I am one of them. But like, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, this is where
fortunate for us,
private industry. Well, I can keep going, but private industry comes in and supports. You know, that's the invisible hand. The beauty of the invisible hand of the free market. Ultimately, like, these things are popular.
Yeah,
this is things that we consume for.
I got to say, Sarah, I have not been impressed with private industry coming in to defend rights. They're all caving on DEI.
Oh, I don't mean rights. You know, no, definitely not. I mean individual personalities.
What's right?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, albeit Eminem and Colbert and others are stars, and others will exploit their popularity, I suppose. But it's... I wouldn't count on industry in general as having a conscience.
Definitely not. It's just that where there's money to be made.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, the music industry made money because Eminem was a brat. And so, like, and highly critical of presidents and, like, was exposing, you know. It's not exactly similar because Stephen Colbert is, of course, like in that quasi legitimate journalism space. But like, maybe that even lends more strength to the pulpit that he has.
But I think that part of what we're seeing with Trump being so blatant, is that I think that his base believes that this is how Washington has always worked and that Trump is just being transparent about it. So if there were a deal to be made with the FCC under a different administration, it might happen behind closed doors, but it's happening anyway. He really plays into that. We can't trust anyone. It's fake news. It's fake this. It's fake that. Drain the swamp. And so I don't think that I think his base doesn't get upset about this kind of stuff because they just say, well, you know, this is how Washington has always worked. But, you know, our president, you know, he's at least getting something for it. They're probably applauding the fact that he is getting something from the liberal media.
Well, we'll end with that. My thanks to the group this morning, and we thank you all for being here, and thanks to everybody who wrote in. And we'll be back tomorrow with another roundtable discussion. We'll continue our show as we march on this hour and next. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.